your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Thank you for joining us here on Nerds from the Crypt, where we interview indie horror creators about their horror projects. A big thank you for all of you who are keeping up with the podcast. And if you or anyone you know who is an indie creator would like to come onto the podcast to talk about their horror projects, you can contact us on social media. Just search at NerdsFTC on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and X. You can also email us at nerdsftc@gmail.com. For today's episode, we welcome John Dexter to the Crypt. We actually ended up talking about two different series that he's currently working on. First, we talked about Alpha Dogs, which is described as Lost meets The Incredible Journey. It follows Buck, Pitbull born with the power of regeneration along with heightened intelligence and strength. Alpha Dogs takes you on a cross-country journey with Buck and his team of dogs as he attempts to stop a plan for revenge on America's leaders. Next, we talked to John about his supernatural mystery comic, Dime Store Detective. The story is about Detective Donald McIndar as he investigates a serial killer who has displayed his latest victim over the same burial grounds his father and uncle buried multiple bodies 40 years earlier. So let's go ahead and jump into that conversation.
Started watching The Shelter. I'm not sure if anybody's checked that out. If you all checked that out yet? On Prime. So we started watching that. It's interesting. It's a nice little buildup of good character development and stuff like that. There's a lot of weird aspects, good time jumps and stuff, and all. So it's kind of, for me, it's hitting that kind of Stranger Things kind of feel, even though it's not Stranger Things, but it's kids trying to figure out what's going on in their town while it's all wonky, and trying to figure out things that happened in the past with their parents and other stuff like that, and
nice.
weird things happening, dark secrets popping up.
I'll have
up.
To check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
And with us today, forgot to introduce our guest, John Dexter. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Always enjoy having people on the podcast to talk about their projects. It's always interesting to hear how it comes together and with the plans for the future and all that. Are you watching or anything like, or reading anything lately?
Yeah,
other than your stuff.
Yeah, I just started listening to the audiobook of Colorado Kid by Stephen King. I'm a big Stephen King fan, which gives me, you'll find out, was one of the inspirations for my new comic book, Dime Store Detective. But yeah, I started reading Colorado Kid and I got distracted doing a lot of other things. So now I just said, I'm going to listen to it as I drive. So it's been pretty good so far. It's one of those, he got asked from this, the old pulp novels. They try to make it look like the old dime store novels. And so he went in there. I think it's called Hard Crime Novels. But anyway, so they asked Stephen King to do one for him, and you know, a little small company, and he agreed to it, and it really helped make a name for them, and it was pretty cool of him. So yeah, that's what I'm reading, listening to right now.
I think you can still say it's reading. That's what I do.
Yeah.
When someone says, am I reading something? That's what I use. I usually do audiobooks. So I'm like, I'm reading this.
Yeah, reading with your ears.
It makes you sound more intelligent.
Yeah. I have not read that one. I've read a couple of Stephen King books, but I haven't read that one. But I've actually, a while back, I had started watching the show Haven. Which is based on the Colorado Kid.
Yeah.
And I never got to finish watching it, so I went back and started from the beginning so I can watch it all the way through. So hopefully
I don't know soon. Did that show get renewed? Did it get canceled? I don't know. I like to read the book first before I watch it.
Ended up getting ended up getting canceled on before the last season came out. So they were able to do a finale for it. So they were actually able to finish the story.
Oh,
but,
good.
But I believe they had to hurry it up. So
okay. Well, the novel's not even that long. I can't believe they were making seasons.
Yeah, I don't think it stuck too much to the source. I think it was more of just the premise and.
Yeah, it must have been because it's really small, short novel. So
it's kind of more like the X-Files and Eureka and all that kind of mm-hmm. shows. Monster of the Week or Trouble of the Week, I guess, whatever it should be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm actually catching up on Chucky, so I can be ready for the next season, the third season. I don't know if anybody's seen that one, but it's pretty good.
I gotta rewatch stuff again because it really was good.
Yeah, I think the third season. I think I don't know if it's not out yet. It's going to come out this week or something like that. Yeah. Or is it next month? I'm not. It's gonna come out here pretty soon, and it's really good. So if you haven't watched it, I would recommend it. I believe it's on USA and Sci-Fi still, but I watched it on Peacock, so. I was able to binge it like in 3 days. I rewatched from the beginning again.
Just sitting there with it on, just like, oh, I gotta watch it all.
I'm actually able to work a lot faster, whether it be schoolwork or work with something in the background. So I'll usually have something in the background so I can get me. When it's too silent, I can't do stuff.
Yeah, I get that.
But let's go ahead and get to know John. Here for our guests who are going to be learning about your comic book and all that. Let's go ahead and just learn a little bit about you. What you tell our audience about yourself?
I've been doing, writing comic books for a while. My background was more in the screenwriting gig, trying to break in as a screenwriter. I got to the semifinals twice of the Academy Awards. They put on the screenplay contest, and there's over 7,000 participants, and I got in the top 180 two years in a row. So I thought I was going to get a movie deal going, and that fell through. And then in 2020, I decided to take one of my scripts called Alpha Dogs and turn that into a comic book. Then COVID hit. And I thought, well, I've heard of Kickstarter. So I put on Kickstarter, got funded, and now I'm on my seventh Kickstarter campaign for my comic books.
You got addicted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's a great venue to try to avenue to tell your story. And as anybody who's tried to break into comics or screenwriting, it's very difficult. So sometimes you just got to take the bull by the horns and do it yourself.
You know, we've had a couple of people who are screenwriters come on to the podcast, and the thing they have in common is that they're trying to sell their project. But right now, I think what people are looking for are projects that are already established. So they usually will tell them, how about you turn it into a comic book? That way we have a property, an IP that we can actually buy that people may have already seen, already know that. And that's why they end up doing the comic books.
Yeah, they want that package.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of trying to put my packages together and hopefully get them either a publishing deal or film deal. I'd be happy with either. So I've got 4 issues of my Alpha Dogs comic, which is about this dog that has the power to heal from any wound. He's smart enough to understand human speech, and he has a heightened strength. Him and his owner and this older, grumpier pit bull with the same abilities are on the run for mercenaries that are trying to kidnap the dogs to manipulate their powers. It's a really fun series. It was inspired by my own dog. I have a pit bull mix, and we lived in this town that had outlawed pit bulls. So we had the choice to move or get rid of the dog. So, of course, we moved. And that was the genesis of the main character, this dog that's feared by the public because of his breed and his size, but he actually has a huge heart. So it's been really fun. I just am shipping out issue 4 right now that was funded on Kickstarter, and that completed that first arc. So we start with the dog seemingly dead on the beach. He's all shot up and he heals instantly. And then at the end, and then we flash back through the four issues. And at the end, we find out how we ended up there. So it's a lot of mystery and very serious tone. It's not, even though there's talking dogs with these specific abilities, it's not hokey at all. It's very, told very serious. So it's been getting popular as it goes along. So based on that, I was, the success of that, I started my other Helma book idea, which kind of lends itself to the horror genre. It's, I tell people, it's kind of like Stephen King's It meets True Detective. It's called Dime Store Detective. It's kind of a take on the old pulp dime store novels, you know, with the the covers with the mad scientist with the damsel in distress all tied up and the cop trying to save her. Those silly novels of the 30s and 40s. And I kind of took that concept, not much the story, but the concept, and turned it into the comic book that's currently on Kickstarter.
I gotta say, for anybody listening, Alpha Dogs is fantastic. If you get a chance to go find it somewhere, or whatever, go check it out. Dan and I are covering it over on Funny Book Forensics. We backed.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, all the.
Oh, I remember. I was gonna say your voice was so familiar, and I couldn't place it. That's hilarious.
Yeah, so cool. we're fans. We're waiting for issue 4 so we can cover that coming up. So it's we're excited. We're fans.
So. Okay, did you buy the digital or the print?
So I know Dan's been he's been grabbing up the stuff for the show. So I think he's getting the print because he's putting it in his collection. So he's been buying stuff that he enjoys. Yeah.
That's awesome because I, like I said, I just started shipping them. So I don't know if he has the comic book yet. It's been us. They had a big comic con here in Michigan, and luckily for me, I have a local comic book printer. And they were overwhelmed with orders, so I had to wait a while. But I have them back, and I've shipped half of them, over half of them so far. So I'm just wondering if he got it yet.
Oh, I know he's been talking about it because I know that's like I think we're I want to say I know he's got it on the schedule for like next week or the week after for us to cover. So
he probably has.
Yeah.
Cool.
And for anyone who's.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it.
Huh.
For anyone who's looking for John on Kickstarter, you just look for the dog, the good dog.
Yeah. Yep. That's, and the picture is my new puppy. The other one, he passed this year. He was almost 14. So I'm hoping that Alpha Dogs can continue and kind of be a tribute to him. So, he passed in March 22nd. My wife, we had got him. Some guy was selling, well, he wasn't calling them pit bulls. He was selling them French bulldog mixes in a little crate at Walmart parking lot almost 14 years ago. And, of course, my wife, she took the run of the litter. And it turns out it was a pit bull mix. And when he passed in March, we weren't going to get any more dogs for a while. We were done. It was pretty heartbreaking, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then she had the day off on Good Friday and was at Walmart, and some guy was selling, he was calling them boxer mixes.
Yeah.
Out of a crate. And so she bought him, she bought her, and she's 45% pit. We did DNA tests because we knew she was pit. She's like 45% pit bull. 38 American Bully and 9% boxer, and she was supposed to be a boxer mix, but I mean, we wanted her any because she looked, you know, we're now, of course, that dog that you grow up with or you fall in love with, and that's all only breed you buy. So they were pretty much going to be pit bull mixed dogs for life.
Before we jump into that, I wanted to ask you, how did you get into the horror genre?
Well, boy, when I was a kid, my parents were, you know, it's the 80s, so nobody knew or cared about scaring the shit out of your kids. And they watched Salem's Lot. Ooh. And that scared the heebie-jeebies out of me when I saw that kid, the Dracula kid, floating at the window scratching it. I mean, I think any child of the 80s knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Very famous scene. So that really, I have been a fan of Stephen King's work mainly forever, and I love, even though it's not, it's more cheesy than horror, I love that old cheesy 50s Ed Wood, movies. It's just that schlock. That was kind of the beginning of Dinosaur Detective. It was took place in the 50s during that in Hollywood, that time period. And then as a lot of writing goes, it totally shifted away from that to 1981. So in the present. So those are my two big influences. But yeah, I've read or listened to, boy, more Stephen King than any other author. I'm got to be closing on 40 books by now. Wow. So
nice.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Stephen King?
I love his stuff. The Shining, definitely.
Oh, nice, nice.
It's very personal. You can tell it's a really personal story. And because he was staying at that, I'm sure everybody knows the story, staying at the hotel that it was an inspiration for The Shining. Mm-hmm. And he was an alcoholic and he was a teacher. So it's very personal, I think, for him. And yeah, Stephen, the funny thing is, as much as he's ragged on The Shining movie, I think the movie's actually better than the book. And the book is my favorite Stephen King's book. So
I think he's come around to the movie though.
Yeah, oh, has he?
I have to go. I have to look for it, but I'm pretty sure I had read somewhere that where he was talking about that he's kind of softened on the movie. I don't think he it's not that he doesn't like the movie. It's just that it's different from what his vision for what the movie should have been.
Yeah. Well, we've seen Stephen King direct, and it's I would stick to the people that, I mean, the greatest. In my opinion, the second greatest film director of all time, Stanley Kubrick. Of course, I gotta see what my favorite, the best is now. Of course, Akira Kurosawa. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him, but
oh yeah, I thought you were gonna say Stephen King because, like, Maximum Overdrive is so good. I mean, how could you not fall in love with that?
He did a lot of cocaine on that movie.
Well, I mean, what was it? Cujo? He doesn't even remember writing Cujo.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think when he wrote the, I don't know if you guys ever read or listened to, if you're the turtle that takes him through outer space or mm-hmm. the space ride. Yeah. It's, I think he did a lot of drugs when he wrote that too. So
nope.
I don't know. I mean, it enhanced the writing.
Yes, yeah, that's what they all say.
But my favorite book right now. I actually read it a while back, but it's 11/22.
Oh, that's top. That's probably my third favorite after It. Stephen King, the It, and then that would be my third one. I would say
I've been listening to Duma Keys,
mm-hmm.
Stephen King's Duma Keys, and it's a trip. I mean, I just started this week, and you know, I'm like, I'm purposefully, I listen to books in the car, and I've been purposely driving just to keep listening. So,
like,
it's pretty good. I've never read that one or listened to it.
Like, Greg, you work from home. What are you doing? Check it out.
I know, right? That's the thing. I keep taking trips, man. I'm like, oh, I got to go to the grocery store. I got to go get gas again. I gotta go do this doctor's appointment that I don't have just to go listen to more Stephen King. It keeps driving me back.
What I go to bed listening to stuff. I have my headphones in, and mm-hmm. I read Just After Sunset when it first came out, and mm-hmm. I'm listening to that one again. I like to listen to stuff that I've already read so that I'm not missing things as I fall asleep, and yeah. I don't know if you've read that one, John or Greg.
No.
It's a collection of short stories. And one of the short stories in there is actually the biggest one there. It's called N. And it's about the end of the world, pretty much. It's a guy with OCD who believes that if he doesn't do these rituals every day, you know, touching the doorknob like 7 times before he leaves or whatever. You know, the typical thing you see in movies with OCD. That if he doesn't do those, then he's opening the world for a portal to pretty much like Cthulhu type monsters to come through.
Oh no!
Oh shit!
Yeah, yeah, it's really good. So I would recommend it if you haven't read or heard it.
Yeah, I'm not his newer stuff is definitely, in my opinion, not as good as his older mm-hmm. stuff. Oh, it's but yeah, it's I haven't read Fairy Tale. I heard I don't. That's kind of. I heard that was pretty good, but I haven't read that one, the newest one.
I have that one on my to buy list, and I haven't read the Institute. And I need to go back to that one.
Oh, that was good, but it was definitely. He was watching a lot of Stranger Things when he wrote that. It's good, but it's definitely very Stranger Things ish.
I got my old beat up copy of Bachman books I've had since I was probably too young to be reading these books, and that one is I like to say it's my yearly read. Like I'll grab it and I'll dig in, and I got a couple pages marked for favorites. Bachman books.
Oh, yeah, the collected one. Oh,
okay. Yeah. I've had this thing, like, I think my mom's friend left it one time while we were on a trip or something like that, and like left it in the car, and I just pocketed it. So there's a part of me that's like, I feel bad, but then at the same point, like, you know, I really wanted to read it, and I just never gave it back. I have a lot of books like that. Don't ever leave a book in my house or in your car, because I will keep it.
The one that I would tell people that if you have a copy of Rage, you're probably gonna be able to sell that later on for a good amount.
Yeah, no, that's one of the book. That's one of the stories that I have marked in here. It's very timely.
Well, he stopped the printing of that book. He says he's no longer gonna allow it to come out just because of the content of it. So I was saying, if you have a copy of that, you're probably going to be able to sell that for a good penny.
Oh, no. Not going to sell it. Not going to sell it. It's
they've already made probably 20 million of them already. So,
so
probably it's starting.
So let's talk about Dime Store Detective. Do you want to go ahead and give the elevator pitch for it for issue one, and then we can go ahead and as much as you want to talk about the different issues?
Yeah. Dime Store Detective isn't an easy elevator pitch because it's so involving. Usually I just say Stephen King's It meets True Detective, and that should get people's attention. But yeah, it's about this detective who comes upon the crime scene in the Appalachian Mountains of the third victim of this serial killer. She's left in this Christ-like pose, hanging from a tree over the burial grounds. The detective's father and uncle buried multiple bodies 40 years ago when they were involved with this moonshine war. We go back and forth from 1981 to the present when the detective is 8 years old. He is raised by this moonshining family. Four generations. They're kind of feared but loved, I guess you could say, in this town in Athens, Georgia, pretty big town. And they run whiskey from their still that they've been doing. And then the father ends up going to jail for a stint. And when he comes back, the Dixie Mafia's kind of underling group has come in and tried to push the family out of business. Now, the Dixie Mafia, if anybody's not familiar, it's a real group of gangsters from the kind of the Dirty South. I think the New York Mafia, think of them, but I think the good old boys in the Southern Line. So they try to push the family out of business, and they are proud, you know, people, and they're not going to just lay down. And they end up going to war with him. It's kind of like a really dark episode of Dukes of Hazzard. Because these guys are cousins. They drive this souped up Hemi Barracuda.
It's so cool.
And in issue two, the brothers try to find a new hiding spot for this. They're still and end up finding this cave hidden kind of in Appalachian Mountains. And they go in there and inadvertently release this evil entity that's been trapped there for perhaps hundreds and hundreds of years. And it ends up possessing the uncle, and the story, not to give too much away, kind of goes from there. And then when we flash forward to the present, the moonshiner's son, Donald Mackinder, is a detective. He's really hated by the department because he's kind of a lone wolf guy and is putting his nose into this serial killer case because they left their victim over those grounds where multiple bodies were buried by the detective's uncle and father. So there's a lot of mystery there. Perhaps this evil being is still around, and like, it's got a lot of mystery. If you, like I said, if you like, it's kind of got that hard boiled crime novel feel to it. Like I said, kind of like the corruption of the higher ups, feel to it, but also it's very original story that you're never going to read anywhere else.
And then what I want to know is, well, I guess you kind of,
why I ramble so much?
No. What I want to know is, and I think you already kind of talked about it, but how did this all come together? You said it was more to kind of, well, at least not more, but you said it was kind of to kind of put your ideas into the comic book form. But was there anything else that kind of helped you put the series together?
Yeah, so I had written it many, many, many years ago. Originally, it was called Dime Store Detective. There wasn't enough meat on the bone. There was something that didn't feel like I had, it was totally, the story really had come together yet. You know, it was a detective in the present day after this entity, this being that has no name, that he's chasing. And then about 2 months before I wrote the story, I had listened to this podcast about the Dixie Mafia. And this guy, he was a hitman for the Dixie Mafia. He sold brand pills, did a lot of hits, but the son just loved his father and would not hear, you know, a crossword about him, even though his dad was this murder hitman for hire who was doing time. Just a fantastic story, hitman for the Dixie Mafia. But the son just kept the faith and thought his father was, you know, not such a terrible guy, even though he committed all these crimes back in the late 60s. And that kind of is what really brought the story together. I wanted to tell this comic book about this detective that kind of carries the family torch throughout the years, even though the town has vilified his family as murderers. He kind of takes this other path and doesn't believe his dad is the murdering killer that everybody thinks he is. And once this evil entity kind of rears its head, the detective has to kind of come to terms with a lot of truths of his childhood. So if you have a kind of a complicated family, and if you have a, you know, it's a great kind of love letter between a father and a son. This kid that is taught a lot of life lessons, as you read with issue one, from his dad, and he kind of carries them over to the present when he's on the hunt for the serial killer, and this being rears its ugly head again.
This entity that you're talking about, is that did you make that up, or is that based on a legend from the area, or?
No, but it should be. You know, you've always heard the story. The Appalachian Mountains is famous for disappearances, mm-hmm. and these caves that go, you know, to nowhere. And there's still a lot of hidden caves in there, they say. But it's not really based on anything in particular other than, you know, kind of letting your imagination go wild when you hear about, you know, disappearances in the Appalachian Mountains and perhaps creatures in there. So that kind of was why I wanted it to take place in that area in that time frame.
I totally believe that it should be a legend. I mean, it should be linked into a legend. It feels like it.
Yeah, because, you know, in issue two, the cousins are out looking for a still, and he kind of trips and falls and rolls down this hill and to find this hidden cave with a piece of slate over it. Something, you know, hundreds of years ago, maybe even thousands, is blocking the entrance, and I think it's kind of cool that I came up with it. And then as they crawl through the cave and find this antechamber with this warning carved up on the wall, which there's a mystery, of course, there that will get revealed as the story goes along. So I think it's kind of definitely something that could be based on truth, even though it's obviously fiction. And then whoever was there kind of trapped that being in there set up these little wooden tiki dolls in a circle to hold the entity there. And then, you know, they cross that the invisible barrier and all hell breaks loose.
Don't people ever learn that if you don't want people to go in there, you make it seem like it's not dangerous to go in there? It's like,
exactly.
The more warning you give, the more people are going to want to go in.
It's just human nature. You get curious. You're like, oh, what's that? Why shouldn't I cross this police line? Why don't you want me to see that thing?
So,
absolutely
not from personal experience.
Do you have a set number of issues that you've already planned out? Or?
No, it's 8 issues. They're already written. When usually what will happen with something will just keep percolating and building up until it just has to burst. And I write it in a fury. So I was writing an issue every 2 days.
No.
Yeah, it was very, I mean, I was really, it's a great story. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I think it's a really, really fun story, original story that people will enjoy. But yeah, I was writing an issue every 2 days and then I would write the next one. So all 8 issues were written out over a year ago. I was going back and went right before I send the comics to the letterer, I you know, look at the script and I date every time, and there's the last issue I had written originally back in July of last year. So, and I just will keep on going through it. So yeah, it's all 8 issues. They've been written for over a year ago, so it's now it's just hopefully getting the funds to keep them going. So all of them.
What is the process from turning like a script into a comic book?
You know, it really, if it's I know this might sound cliche, but the story kind of dictates itself. You know, you hope that you don't have to sit there and think, oh, we should go here. It's kind of a locomotive, and but then after that locomotive's stopped, then you have to go through and go from, you know, driving it to Winnipeg to driving it to you know, Detroit. You know, you gotta bear it down and get to just the good stuff, because any writer they tend to ramble, and in any scene to make it good, you want to come in at the very least possible moment. You know, you don't walk through the door and say hi and find a dead body. You are looking at a dead body, you know, so kind of like that. So it's a lot of paring down, but usually, you know, if it's something good, what I do, it's kind of sitting and brood and taking shape in my mind for a while, and I will take notes down constantly, and then write it. And usually it's a fast and furious write.
You touched on something that I want to just jump back to. You said locomotive. Now, what kind of locomotive is this that we're talking about? Because I'm very, very interested.
You know, like the one from like Back to the Future 4, kind of like that, you know, the old one. The one from the old Buster Keaton movie, you know.
Perfect. You probably know that. Excellent. So when you're doing your writing and stuff like that, as you had this scripted out like over a year ago, and you're starting to go through and put it all together and piece by piece, when you're getting everything together, have you had instances in which you had to go back and change stuff because it just didn't fit with when you wrote it a year ago, and now you're in a part. You're now into production and everything's kind of like gelling together. Have you ever gotten to that point where you're like, oh no, this is now I've got something new. I got to change this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't be with Dempster Detective, but Alpha Dogs, I'll have to, once I do the trade paperback, I will have to go back and change stuff because issue one, there was another dog in Alpha Dogs. And so at the beginning of Alpha Dogs, I don't know if you recall, there's two tracks of dogs. There's two paw tracks. Well,
yes.
I had to eliminate a dog for time constraints because and so now there's only going to be one dog track. in issue one, Salem, the antagonist of the story, he's an underling of Ina, the owner of the dog. Well, things changed and now it's the opposite. So I'll have to go through. So unfortunately, once the comic's printed and you have so much time to work on it and eke it out, then things may change. That's so one problem with writing a story that's developed.
Yeah.
With Dime Store Detective, nothing's going to change. It's pretty much all well mapped out. It's, you know, and it's an 8-issue series where Alpha Dog's, you know, if I'm
growing,
lucky,
it was growing.
that'll be about 50 issues. So it's, yeah. So unfortunately I've got to make a few changes. My Alpha Dog's issue one was probably my worst comic because, you know, it's the first one, kind of still a little bit learning the process. And I've made some mistakes with issue one of Alpha Dogs that I wish I could go back, but.
That's okay. I'm going to stop you there because honestly, that's kind of what made Dan and I like fall in love with the way that you're telling the story. I mean, make mistakes and learn from them. But honestly, when you read a comic and it's written by somebody that wants to make something and they're putting their heart into it, you can see it, you know, you can see that on the page and you can see that coming through. So it was like, we forgive, you know, a reader that wants to read that kind of thing is going to forgive those things that you might feel are giant glaring mistakes or whatever, because we're enjoying the story. You're telling a good story. You're telling something that we can connect to. And, you know, you took those things and you definitely made those changes when you wrote Dime Store Detective, because it's a totally, it reading through this and knowing that you wrote the other book, I'm like, this is a 180 totally.
Yeah, it's definitely a very, very different, story. And I like that. I don't like being, because I could have done another Alpha Dog spinoff like I was going to do, which is why there's a dog, one dog less in the issue, because that was going to spin that off to actually a supernatural horror story.
You kill a dog right off the bat. You are one dog less.
I was gonna say that you kind of play with the emotions of the reader by showing that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think it's a nice grabber. You know, you want something that's gonna really get somebody's attention, and seeing a dog seemingly shot to death on a beach will definitely get somebody's attention. Sometimes to the negative, because people will look at it like, oh, I love dogs. Oh, you have a shot up dog, and I have to explain, well, he's going to heal instantly.
I think people would rather see, it sounds weird, but I think people would rather see children get hurt in comic books and in movies rather than seeing a dog get hurt.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I think because dogs are just big, lovable, dumb animals. they can't really. So, yeah, I know it's funny that so much sympathy came for John Wick because his dog was shot. I think, too, maybe is because people are such assholes.
Yeah.
And a dog, you know, everybody has fond memories of when they were a kid with a dog, you know, with a dog. And, you know, kids are mean.
It's true.
So, do you want to talk about your collaborators for Dime Store Detective?
Yeah. So I hired Stone Tower Studios. They do everything. They do the art, the coloring. They're just terrific. As you can see, the art's just amazing, and the coloring is top notch too. It's the artist did a real great noir feel to Dime Store Detective when he drew it, but Lucas, they're out of Argentina, Stone Tower Studios. Lucas Sherita is the project manager. He does all the lettering, the graphics. Alfonso is, he does the artwork, the drawing. And Lucas Ortiera does the coloring. So it's a great group of guys. I'm very fortunate to find them, because they kind of take care of everything in that aspect. They put the trailer together as well. And
oh wow,
as you can see, the trailer is awesome. I mean, I would put that trailer against anything Marvel has done for their motion comics.
Did you have to, or did you have something that you gave them to say, like, this is the feel I want?
Oh, no. So I wrote the script and I said, hey, do these pages from the comic first so we can put this trailer together. And then I kind of say what should be happening based on and how to set everything up for the trailer. And it takes me forever to find the right music to get the feel of it. But this one took a while, but I think I got the right kind of tone that I wanted. And then they make all the magic happen. They put the motion in there and the graphics and set the music even better than how I wanted it for when they do it. So yeah, they've taken everything and made it better than I've written, which is obviously what you want.
Did you have any what's it called, instances where maybe they were telling you, no, it needs to be this way for the story to be better, and then you're like, oh yeah, that worked out?
Yeah, I don't think, if they offer notes, which is pretty rare, if they do, it's for a good reason. And so 9 times out of 10, I say, oh yeah, okay, go with that. Plus, it shouldn't really be one person's vision anyway. You know, I like it when people have ideas to make it better, because usually they're right, because they wouldn't be, that's so, like I said, it's very rare for them to point something out. And so, like I said, 9 times out of 10, I say, okay, because it shouldn't be, you know, you kind of pigeonhole yourself if you just want your vision and don't let anything up for interpretation.
Yeah. I've actually, the last couple of interviews of, the reason I asked that question is because the last couple of episodes, when we're talking about the art and all, they're like, yeah, this is not exactly the style that I wanted. But the artist was like, no, this is exactly what you want, because this is what the story calls for. And they're like, no, but you know, they're back and forth. And then they go, but at the end of the day, they were actually right. They chose the right style for it because that was what the story needed and called for.
Yep. They're more of an expert on it than I am. I'm the writer. They're the artist. I let them do their thing and try not to put my nose too much in it.
Because it's a good way to be.
Yeah. I think that's when you find the best quality of anything is to have it collaborated, because then you're getting their best ideas, you know, hopefully.
Oh, I mean, it definitely shows in this book. I mean, like the marriage of your idea and their artwork, the way it all kind of, it goes together, all the panels and stuff like that. I mean, it's a very good feel. It fits. I like the way that you do your time jumps where it's black and white. They really pop it when it comes back to color. It's super good. Like I can't put a finger, it's the style that they use for the you know, the faces and, you know, everything like that. It's very, has that feel of something like a, yeah, like an old 50s strip.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to do the black and white to kind of, well, for one thing, to help the reader, because, you know, number one rule for a comic book writing is to try to keep it simple. You know, don't, because once you confuse somebody, a reader, then you're basically, you've lost the comic, you know.
Right.
If anything, once they get confused, they just kind of tune out. So, and I wanted that look to it, you know, that 80s, I mean, 80s wasn't in black and white per se, but for anybody that's younger, 80s feels probably like the 50s it does to us in our 40s.
You're so old.
Yeah. So I thought it was a really cool.
I think what you said there, you don't want people to get lost, and you want people to go back to the beginning and start from the beginning again, to, because they like the story, not because they're trying to figure out, wait, where did I get lost here? I've had that happen a couple of times, and I'm like, wait, what did I miss? But
yeah, when I did Alpha Dogs, I've had a few people get confused because I do go back and forth. To me, it's like, well, it's obvious they have different hair hairstyles, different hair colors, different hairstyles, but or beard. But then you have to understand they didn't spend hours and hours and hours writing it. You know, they're reading it, so
yeah,
it could be definitely confusing for people. I don't like so much walking readers through it. I just, for me, which is probably could be definitely wrong opinion, I don't like slowing people down. So,
well,
but
oh, there was no slowdowns here.
When you're trying to guide the reader,
I hope so.
You kind of run the risk of people being like, well, this guy thinks I'm dumb or something. I need to be guided 100% of the time. You have to guide them, right? But not to the point where you're having to spell everything out. So I don't know if that made sense.
No, it definitely does. I understand. I run into that problem, so it's better, I think, to be overly cautious so you don't confuse the reader. And it's a learning process, like anything else.
So let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign. Let me go back to it real quick. I accidentally clicked out of it. But do you want to go ahead and let people know what they can get for backing the story?
A great comic book.
Yes.
So you can buy each of the issues. You can buy issue 1, 2, 3, or buy them all together. I think I have $17 for all three PDFs. And so I try to make it discount as much as I could and still try to get funding for this comic book, because it's a very specialty comic book. You know, you're like I said, you're not going to read a comic book like this, and it's definitely a different genre than most people probably buy for their comic books. You know, it's not a superhero story. It's not a TNA comic book. It's got a great story for people that love to read something original, but it's like I said, it's very much in that old school noir crime mystery book. So you can get all three issues, I think, for $35 for the print copies, which is pretty good considering how much it costs to print. You know, I'm not Marvel where I can print a comic book for 10 cents. It costs me over $2 just to print one comic book. So, and then you got to pay, you know, it's very expensive to get a comic book produced. So it's $12 for issue 1 and 2. And then for issue 3 is 14. The comics are 28 pages, where most of your Kickstarter comic books are 24 pages, 21 to 24. So it's a few more pages. So that's why I'm still not charging a lot compared to what most people will charge for a 28-page comic book. So issue 3 is 14. And then you can get specialty tiers, where you can get the comic book for 17, you can get an autographed, you can get a Kickstarter exclusive sticker, and you can have your name on the thank you page of the comic. And then there's another tier where you can get all of my comics, including Alpha Dogs, in case you missed out on issues 1 through 4. And so, yeah, it's got a lot of really cool tiers.
Do you have any, there's probably jumping the gun, but do you have any stretch goals in mind or anything like that?
Yeah, there's going to be stretch goals. That for some reason Kickstarter has changed the setup, so for some reason it didn't save the stretch goals, so we're going to post those next week, so hopefully sometime this week. One of the stretch goals is higher quality pages. Another one, once you get up to 4,000, is an exclusive sticker. And then if it gets to 5,000, then it's an exclusive print will be done. So, I mean, personally, I don't really, I'm not really into the stretch goals. For me, if I buy a comic book on Kickstarter, I just throw all that other stuff away. I'm just there to read the comic book. But some people do like them, so we've included them with this.
I always think, from when I'm talking to the different creators, it's like it's always a fine line where you want to be able to provide other goodies to the people buying it, but then you don't want to overextend yourself either, to the point where you're spending more money than you thought you were going to, because more people who purchased it than what you were expecting, which is a good problem to have. But at the same time, if you're overspending on the stretch goals, you're munching into your ability to purchase or create the comic.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't want to you definitely don't want to have posters, because those will get you in a lot of trouble, because you usually got to do those separately. So
shipping, I'm sure, is a nightmare for that kind of stuff. You want something that's easy to pack up and send out. Here's a question for the listeners when they're backing this. When you send out your actual copies of the book, how do you send those out? I know some of our listeners are big into collecting and stuff like that, making sure things come. So how do you?
Yeah, I put mine in the Gemini mailers. I mean, that's really the way to go. It's great for protecting the comic book, so there's no bends or anything. And the mailers are specifically made for comic books. So, I put mine in there. And so there isn't any chance of any bending.
Yeah. No, I know from Alpha Dogs, that's how you do it. But I just wanted to know, I wanted the listeners to hear it from you.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. I've only
ever gotten one comic that didn't come in one of those type of mailers. And it did come a little, a bent, yeah, and you know, for the most crinkled. Part, it's. I mean, it's fine, but it kind of still when you see it and you look at it and you want to go back to it and you see it like that, like, oh, I wish it didn't have that.
There's that little part, yeah. You're like, oh, why is there a crease there? Oh man, I didn't put that crease there.
let's say we go ahead and go into the future here in the next 27 days. Everything goes perfectly fine, and when do people start receiving their copies?
Well, I'm gonna try to get them. Usually, for most of my comics, it's always about 2-3 months. So I'm hoping that I can have it all done by the end of November. That's my goal. I should be able to. I'm gonna be at a huge Comic Con November 12th, the Motor City Comic Con here in. It's one of the biggest comic cons. So I'm hoping to have my comics by then in my hands. So I'm thinking by then in November, the comics should be printed up.
That's a good turnaround.
Yeah, good.
I think it is. I mean, there's some people you're waiting 6 months.
Some of the big production companies that put their comics out on Kickstarter don't send them out for 3 years. But
I've heard. Yeah, we're halfway done producing it. So I don't see why it shouldn't be too much of a delay.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. And I mean, you're halfway done producing it. You're halfway done, almost halfway to your goal. I mean, you got a very modest goal, which is great. I mean, for anybody listening.
It's just as much money as I can lose. It definitely costs me more than that to make it. That's just the least amount I can lose. So.
Well, that's why people need to back it and go further.
Do you, maybe Greg knows too. Do you think putting a lower goal helps people be like, oh, I'm actually gonna get this because it's not too ridiculous to try to get to it, and maybe they'll be more willing to pledge?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought if I put a lower one, then Kickstarter gets less because they get 10%, so it'll save me a little bit of money. Plus, I think if people say, oh, this will be funded, I'm not wasting my time pledging. Then I think that may make a difference. But then sometimes, like if it's kind of a bigger goal, people will be more likely to come out of the woodwork and
to try to
back
it
so you can get your comic made. So I don't know.
I know from my experience, like with Starlight, we had, I would say a goal that, like, all our goals we've hit were pretty modest. I want to say we're like at the 4,000, and we backed at well over almost double. So it gave people that, oh, hey, there's the ability to get the book and then get more people to.
Because I've seen some that fail, that they look awesome, but they fail, but they, because they're trying to get like 36,000 or something like that. I'm like, ooh, man, that's a large, and some of them make it and some of them don't, but that's a big ask.
See that with movies a lot.
So is there anything that you still want to go ahead and talk about that we may have jumped over, or anything that we want to make sure to talk about?
No, just you can find me on Twitter at Real Alpha Dogs and on Instagram at alpha_dogs_comic. And I'm on Facebook too. So give me a follow. You can check out all the photos and some of the drawings from the campaigns. But most hopefully you go over and check out the Kickstarter. If you like the first one, you're definitely going to love what comes next, because the issue one is a lot of setup, and there's more payoffs as it goes along, and people have really loved issue two. And if they back it, they can get all three issues, and the story just keeps getting better as it goes along, because we develop and find out more about this mystery.
I want to make sure that you come back when this gets picked up for HBO or for a movie.
Yeah, I know. Everybody always says that. They're like, oh, go get a Netflix. You can get a great. It's like, well, it's not like I'm just going to call them up and they're going to be, oh, someone I've never heard of. Let me. So, I mean, that definitely is the goal. And I think it would make a great series. I just got to get in front of somebody's eyes.
This, of all the ones that we have, I think this one has one of the best chances, because it feels really fleshed out already just by the first issue. And I really believe that's what it really takes, is that people have to believe that these characters are already fleshed out. You're not working through it as you're creating the story, and it looks like you already made the they already have a backstory. You're not trying to figure it out as you're going.
Yeah,
exactly. And I have a screenwriting background, so it's very cinematic already.
I honestly feel the same way you do. Like, it definitely has that good feel that if you are into this type of thing, it has a great cinematic feel to it. You should read this, for one. You should go and tweet it out to all the streaming services that they need to go check this out, because this is something that it definitely could get picked up, I feel. And John, like, seriously, just go hit them up. Don't be scared. Keep building the content. I mean, this really does. It's a nice build up. I'm throwing my money at it. So you all should check it out. And if it's your fit, do it too, because it's Saul's right. You jump into this story, you got characters that you start to connect with. They don't have a whole bunch of the backstories being told to you right then and there. You're not searching and digging with a shovel. Everybody's picked up a book where you're looking at it, you know, a comic or whatever, and it takes forever to get to that. I mean, almost like this podcast took like 40 minutes to get to the content. You're showing us everything right then and there. And I love, like I said, with the time jumps and stuff like that, it helps the reader pick up those nuances of why Mac is Mac. And, you know, you get a little bit of his history and stuff like that. And that's great. And I feel like anybody that's picking this up is going to just follow through with it. Like I said, it's a really fast and easy, good read. You're not getting lost in the sauce, and you're flowing with everything. It all makes sense.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Man, and like I've always said, on the podcast, if you're not able to back it for whatever reason, share the link and get it out there. Because other than backing, that's going to be the best way to get it out, get the word out, and make that the algorithm work for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep that moving. Definitely. Keep that algorithm.
Yeah, always fighting that algorithm constantly. If anybody can share it out and tweet it and spread the word, it'd be helpful. It's a long, arduous process of getting funding. It's the Kickstarters. It's not a lot of fun to run one, especially if you're not funded yet. So
you can do what Greg does and start eating
the stress,
crazy stuff for views.
Oh shoot, dude! I don't. Yeah, no. Supernatural Baby Detective. If we get 60 backers by tonight, then I am eating some garbage for sure. I have what's a plate full of nasty. The one that's active right now, Supernatural Baby Detective. It is a
I have heard of that.
Also a yeah, my buddy Kendrick. Reagan wrote it, and my buddy John colored it, and Ram did the art. It is freaking amazing. Like it fits Dime Store Detective in a sense. Like it's a great pairing. If you're looking for two Kickstarters to back at the moment, you've got Dime Store Detective, which deals with with a grown up detective going hard boiled style and going I want to say balls to the wall for his town and everything like that. And then you got a Supernatural Baby Detective, where it's very much like I want to say you take all this, but then you got a baby and trying to figure things out, man. you got a detective that you know, it's a baby. look who's fighting Cthulhu now.
That sounds pretty cool.
So that episode, by the time you guys are hearing this one, should be out as of I think it should go out today, but and then you'll see this one, you'll listen to this one in a couple days afterwards. So hopefully you've already listened to that one.
Yeah,
you have to. That's cool. So yeah, I want to thank John for joining us here this morning and giving us all a cool content to put out. Make sure to go out there and back the Kickstarter, and like I said, if you can't back it, share it on social media so that someone else can possibly find it and back the project.
Well, thanks guys. I appreciate having me on.
And we'll leave it there, and guys, yeah, we'll see definitely. You all next time on Nerd from the Crypt.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.